Hey, this is John at Crooks and Liars, and I'm joined by the new editor and publisher of The Nation, Ms. Katrina Vandenhoevel. Katrina, thank you so much for joining Crooks and Liars.
Thank you.
How do you feel about your new promotion?
I am very excited. I mean, I think this is a time when places like yours, magazines like The Nation, which are not intimidated by the kind of fear campaign out of this White House, and are prepared to stand up and speak truth to power and, you know, tell it like it is, more important than ever, particularly in a climate where, you know, the conglomeratization of the media is pretty scary. And there's not much courage and gumption and moxie in a mainstream press that more and more seems more interested in infotainment. And this is an administration, boy, which is just, you know, has gotten away with so much. It has lied and deceived us, and only recently has Congress really stepped up, is going to really oversee it's, you know, take on the checks and balances and accountability role it needs to. So The Nation, places like us, are more important than ever in this landscape.
Without a doubt, we need that voice, and the press has pretty much rolled over to the White House, and they are finally showing a little, as you say, gumption and calling. McClellan's been just getting hammered lately, and it seems like for the press, oh, because Scotty now lied to them, all of a sudden now they show, they get up in arms when for years they've been lying to us, and they just sat there and did nothing.
Not only did they do nothing, I mean, first of all, to believe that a White House press secretary isn't going to lie is a mistake. I mean, but this one has really taken it. It's not about Scott McClellan, though, really. Let's admit it. It's about a White House that has thrived on manipulating, abusing, misleading not only the press, but the American people and the world. But think about the solidarity of journalists in that White House press corps. When one of the people I think is so great, Helen Thomas, did ask some tough questions when it was not as easy as it is now. And then she was banished to Siberia, right? Remember, to the back of the White House press corps room. Was there any solidarity at that point? Not much.
No, and now all of a sudden they're coming to a defense, but exactly, it was like nobody wanted to hold anybody accountable for anything once 9/11 happened, and just with the New York Times and the whole Judy Miller fiasco, where she's a journalist that's participating in the propaganda of the administration, and the journalists just would not ask the hard questions.
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, I think there are two or three things going on here. First of all, the big picture, it seems to me, is, you know, you have a White House, an administration, really kind of waging war on the idea of a free press and a democracy, trying to curtail, you know, our access to routine information. Remembering, you know, all this paid video advertisement, underhanded techniques. And, you know, I think some of this is the larger picture is rolling back the press as a player within the executive branch to make it less important in running, in playing a role in this country. This administration has such contempt for the media. Remember when Bush said he was asked how he got his news? You remember he said, you know, I get it from loyal crony advisors sitting on my lap. But then, the second piece of it, as you said, is where were the journalists asking? There were some. I think of Walter Pincus, for example, at the Washington Post, asking the tough questions in the run-up to war, but they were buried on page A22 of their paper, whereas Judith Miller was getting front page 1, 2, 3 to basically be a funnel for a man who the other day, finally, at long last, as you probably know, the editorial page finally called Ahmed Chalabi for what he was, a double dealer, an unreliable source, a discredited schemer. So I think we're seeing a little bit of, you know, waking up to what, you know, how we've been done a disservice by the press, and finally the media waking up to show that it has some respect for its duty in a democracy.
And especially it was egregious for the New York Times because, let's face it, when the New York Times prints that Saddam is trying to get nukes, people who would be naturally, you know, questioning this would go, oh, if the Times is printing it, this is probably true, as in my case. It's like, wow, this is big stuff. And she was just parroting from Chalabi what
she's
he wanted. It was just despicable.
Talk about the centrifuges we heard all about. She was a centrifuge. Judith Miller was a woman centrifuge masquerading as a woman. No, I think today, you know, Bush comes out again. He's desperate to change the subject. I mean, the last couple weeks, it's been all about let's change the subject. When was the last time they came out with a Supreme Court nominee at 8 a.m. on a Monday morning? But, you know, I don't think it's working. I think the poll today, you know, shows that the public has, you know, Bush has slipped to his lowest point, right? But most important, it seems to me, is public support. The perceptions of Bush's honesty and faith in his ability to fight terrorism are way down. And what was once viewed as a guy who was like a tough leader, remember all that crap?
Oh, yes, the you know, cowboy.
Yeah, now 80% of those polled today, I think it was this AP Ipsos poll, they describe him as stubborn, with 7 of every 10 Republicans agreeing with that description. I think that is very telling. Now, the Democrats may not be looking up in the polls because they got a lot of work to do. They're beginning to step up and question, demand answers, and stop this administration and the Republicans in the Senate from quashing and stonewalling investigations. But if those are Bush's numbers on those core issues, deep trouble.
It really is amazing, because right after the election, they were, for themselves, walking on water so much that they came out with this whole phony idea that Social Security was in danger of being gone and destroyed, and we need to change it now, because they thought that they could do whatever they wanted. Have you seen as fast a change in your life, even with Arnold getting just blitzed in California?
No.
It, to me, that was the bigger story than even the Virginia election or New Jersey, was Arnold just got throttled, and a few months ago, people were trying to have an amendment to have him run for president?
Absolutely. No, yeah, exactly. There was the amendment to try and change the Constitution. In my little dictionary, I have a definition from Nick Gill of Newton, Massachusetts, girly men. males who do not grope women inappropriately. But, you know, no, seriously, we're looking at a shrinking Terminator, who should, by the way, he admitted, should have listened to his wife. But, you know, the great story in California, I think the great heroes, are the nurses. Because it was Arnold trying to stick it to the nurses who really became the face of the public employees. When nurses get angry, when librarians get angry, run for the hills. They the Terminator has been sort of terminated. It took a lot more. It took organized labor. It took an understanding this guy just, you know, there's so much smoke and mirrors going on. Anyway, it's a good sign. I agree with you, because Virginia was real tough, and New Jersey was, I'm glad John Corzine won. I think he's a good progressive. I think the money that went into that race was just disgusting. I mean, it broke all records. And the mud bath launched really by the Republican took that race to new lows, where he was using Corzine's ex-wife's words against him.
That's the pattern. That's the Rovian school. That's what they do when they get, or even when they're not desperate. It's to just print these things that have nothing to do with anything, just a slime smear, and it goes right onto Drudge's page, and then it becomes the talking point. And it's really, I don't know.
I think it backfired in this case, and I also think you're right. It's like standard operating procedure of these people. There's like some playbook somewhere in Karl Rove's secondary brain, because he's given his first one to George Bush. But I think you're right, and I think, as I said before, you know, what's going on, I think, in Vermont has to be looked at. Bernie Sanders, I think he has a great chance of winning that Senate seat, but they're already doing a kind of version of, as I call them, the slime boaters, doing swift boating up in Vermont.
And your book now is a guide to Republicanism, and it's a really timely dictionary to break these myths, and congratulate you on it, because I've been reading it, and it's just really funny and interesting. And talk about Frank Luntz in the beginning.
Yep.
And so, was he an inspiration for this book? And just explain to people who Frank Luntz is.
Yeah, Frank Luntz is the Republican spinmeister excellence, excuse the French, but he has been a kind of MSNBC regular. He combines Madison Avenue techniques with K Street, you know, the iron triangle of lobbyists and Republican money connections. And he's been giving Republicans talking points for years, and he was on The Daily Show about a year ago demonstrating his talents, and he was defining, quote, manipulation as, quote, explanation and education. And when, you know, I just, this idea that over the past few decades the right has engaged in this well-funded program of transforming and abusing the language to suit its political ends was something I thought, could be skewered with satire. But it's serious, too. And what I loved about this book was I asked people to send submissions over the course of 6 months. This was sort of part of a blogging process. We got a couple thousand. I culled what I think are the sharpest, hardest hitting, funniest, and we got people from 44 states, and the most from Texas, which I love, the most definition from Texas, because it just shows, that this guy is not a prophet in is not honored in his hometown.
I think the trance of the American people is starting to finally break and to see that these are just word games and they're not really truthful, or else Bush's poll numbers would not have sank as low as they have. And I just was going through some of the terms, and when you talked about faith-based initiatives and you say don't ask questions.
There's one I love also is Cheney Dick, the greater of two evils. And then there's a Tom DeLay, past tense of DeLay.
Right.
It's funny, and it's also, I think, let's not forget, we're sitting here at a time when we've just learned, talking about the media and the importance of whistleblowing, we've learned that this administration has all these black site camps around the world, right? And there's a term that's come into our language in the last year, your readers will have heard it, called extraordinary rendition.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. As one reader submitted, Milton Felden from Laguna Woods, California, put it as it is, which is, it's outsourcing torture.
Mm-hmm.
And then you talked about Social Security. For now, Bush has lost on that. It's a great victory, which we're going to write about. Now, but think, you remember the fights about how if anyone called it private accounts, they'd have their knuckles wrapped?
Mm-hmm.
They had to call it personal accounts. That was so focus tested.
They just kept changing the term to try to suit what would sell the product better, and it just kept falling and failing. And then so then Bush goes on this 60-day, 90-day tour, and actually his poll numbers go down on Social Security, and they just could not come up with a term which was basically to destroy Social Security. That's what they were doing. And it's a typical Republican talking point where they just hate Social Security so much.
They wanted to gut it. They want to roll back, they want to roll back the hard-earned rights and achievements of the 20th century. And Social Security is the greatest anti-poverty program in this country. And we need a lot of that because under Bush, I don't need to tell you, but we've seen poverty increase every year. And I think that just gets lost in all this spin and all this the pap that comes out of the White House. At the bottom of this, my hope is that the book, and we're sending a copy of the book to everyone who has a definition in it, and asking people if they'll do, a kind of book house party and come up with some new definitions. By the way, which there are quite a few we can think of. I think of, for example, think of what you could do with brownie.
That's a new one. It's almost a Borkism now.
I know, or like Plamed, or Harriet Myard. Anyway, we're sending books to everyone and hoping they'll do like a house party and have a keg and get some new definitions, send them to their local paper, and we're going to continue doing this project on the website here.
Right, it just constantly can be updated. When you talk about poverty, and with the Hurricane Katrina, and I know that, it must have hurt you when Rush Limbaugh, and I think it was Jonah Goldberg, they called it the Hurricane Katrina man, and Uber. I mean, how did that make you feel when they actually had the nerve to say that?
I felt like I'd been punched in the stomach. That was my first personal reaction, and then I felt so disgusted that someone like Rush Limbaugh would stoop to, I should have known, but I still was so disgusted that he would stoop so low, be so vile, in order to discredit someone he disagrees with. It was just disgusting. And I do have a little definition for Rush in the book, which I will find as we talk. But I was it was disgusting. And I have to say, as you remember in those first days, it was tragic and heartrending and horrifying to see what was happening in the Gulf Coast in New Orleans. Now, in the last couple weeks, few weeks, I think Katrina has become associated with something I'm not unhappy to be associated with, which is it's ripped the veil off of the incompetence, the cronyism, the failure of this administration. But in those first few days when Rush Limbaugh did that, I thought it was, you know, as low as it could be. After all, he dittohead, here's the definition, an OxyContin moron.
That says it all. I mean, and in your book also you have a definition of laziness, which is when the poor are not working. I mean, you saw in that whole, the whole hurricane thing, the big divide between Democrats and some really extremely crazy Republicans where they just, to protect the administration, they called the people in New Orleans everything, every kind of despicable name that they could. It was, I mean, that to me was as bad as their response to the whole debacle. And again, when you talked about President Bush not getting his information, I think his aides had to make him a DVD because he was too busy going to San Diego to play guitar on stage to look at what was happening on TV.
But I thought it was a sign of the times that when he tried to fly over, you know, New Orleans and show his moxie, people saw through. People saw through a man who just didn't seem to be clued in to what was happening in his own country. And it certainly blew away the notion of compassionate conservatism and made people realize that, you know, as you said earlier, for these people, laziness is when the poor aren't working, and for these people, leisure time is when the wealthy are not working.
It's just so obvious, and it really, it did expose this administration and that cultural divide. And you have, you know, I think when you have liberals, followers of the Antichrist, I mean, that's a funny one. And I mean, you know, to see, like, they try to paint, I don't know where they got this liberal elite where Bush is an Ivy Leaguer, and, you know, he comes from so much money, to try to make him the working man is a joke.
Yeah, there's been a long... This speaks also to part of what this book is about. I mean, part of what the right has done is this well-funded program to, you know, transform the language to suit its political needs, but it's also funded a relentless assault on liberals, Now, you know, liberals, you can argue, have not served themselves well sometimes, and I think that a lot of liberals and liberalism forgot about the working people in this country and didn't deal with the economic dislocations. But at the same time, you know, for these people like Bush, class warfare, as I, you know, have a definition, means any attempt to raise the minimum wage. I think we need to remind people again and again. I have in here the liberal definition, widely used, this is how they use it, the right, widely used after the words progressive, radical, left, revolutionary, and insurrectionary were banned from the mainstream media, having the double benefit of making moderates seem vaguely dangerous and making revolutionaries seem vaguely embarrassing and ineffectual. As you put it even better, the guy, woman from Montello, Wisconsin, followers of the Antichrist.
And the fact that they take so much money and I'll just say suck up to the extreme religious right, because I don't even consider James Dobson and Perkins the religious figures. I call them circus clowns, because it's all about money. I mean, who is James Dobson to get a call from Karl Rove about Harriet Myers? What gives him the right to get that call?
I heard a good story today from someone who follows the right wing for us, though, that Dobson is in a little trouble with his followers because he hasn't come through. But what, right, you're right. I mean, what's happening is at the deepest core level, and I'm all for, you know, people having a sense of religion. I think that religion and progressives and the left have a great tradition. But when you start mixing religious people, if you want to be nice to them, like Dobson, on calls about the next Supreme Court justice, as happened with Myers, remember that, where you had two judges on a call with, like, Dobson and another evangelical right leader, think it's very scary because at the core of this country's greatness is that separation of church and state.
I think that's what's made us so successful and such a great country. And they want to, you know, I always say they want the Roy Moore Ten Commandment Constitution. Mm-hmm. And to actually, they lie so much about this whole litmus test, and that is their litmus test. It is if the candidate will overturn Roe v. Wade. That's what they're interested in. It doesn't matter anything else. And the Harriet Myers debacle really now has to shut them up. They can't say anything for any questions any Democrat asks any nominee that they have.
It's true. I would go beyond that and say, I mean, I think that the Roe v. Wade is the litmus test, but I think you also have, you know, you got the Republicans with these social conservatives, and then you have these rabid, roll back all restraints on the market types, and they are just desperate to get a judge in there who's really going to disband any kind of protection for ordinary Americans, for workers, and corporate power is going to run amok, and I think that's a big issue for Republicans as well. And, you know, I hate when they come back, I've done these shows, as you say, and they say, well, you hate business, you're a socialist. You know, come on, I think small business is the engine of American growth, I think business is good, but the corporate power in this country, and that trend is very dangerous for a democracy that prides itself on all the things we think we care about.
If you look at just the CEOs, I think, I don't know how many years ago, they used to get maybe 6 or 7 times the amount of an employee. Now it's like 33 times the amount of what people are making. The amount of money they're making is so crazy now, and it is shrinking the middle class.
Absolutely. The middle class is just being squeezed and screwed. You know, no stagnant wages, pensions just ravaged, hard to send your kids to school. Then you got the gas prices. I think that too is where people see in their own lives how they're not doing better with all this talk about growth. The top 2% are doing better. So that again speaks to why I think, you know, people are seeing through. Now, I also thought it was encouraging at the last. A few days ago, that you saw, you know, some of the rollbacks on these wedge issues in Maine was the last. You know, was Maine is not just a northeastern state; it's a pretty independent state. But a good anti-discrimination bill was passed there. But I think you see that in Virginia, the God's guns and gays message was trumped by a kind of, you know, economic growth development. A pragmatism message. And, you know, I do believe in a bolder message than that, but I think we got to trump these wedge issues, which are used to divide us.
That's one thing that the Republicans did very well in this past election. They were able to use those wedge issues to their advantage. And I think now, as we see the polls, the, you know, Karl Rove may not be the brain that everyone thinks he is because, the plummeting of President Bush is got to be tied. Karl Rove takes the credit for getting him elected. He's got to take the credit for throwing the party in the tank.
Yeah, no, Karl Rove. I mean, all this discussion about how brilliant he is and he's going to build a Republican realignment that's going to change the 21st century. We're seeing the limits of an administration which will do whatever it takes to get what it wants. And there's some constraints on that. At the end of the day, I think that a progressive politics that blames people is dead on arrival. And I think people are waking up and seeing through this administration. It's going to take a lot of work because the media is a big filter. We were just talking about how they look at legitimate use of parliamentary rules and they talk about it as a stunt. What are they going to do with Bush's speech? Are they going to really truth squad that speech as they should and point out that he, you know, he's lying through his teeth?
Mm-hmm. Well, they won't because they want to have that appearance of being fair and balanced. So we'll balance just like with the debates. It's like, well, we have to say he misquoted one here and then the other candidate misquoted, you know, or made a mistake here instead of going, well, this guy was wrong 15 times and this guy was wrong 4 times.
Yeah.
And it's a problem. And just for you, when you go on, let's say, MSNBC, and you're there debating with a woman that's from a tabloid newspaper.
I saw some of your good readers send that in. you know, what happens sometimes is you go on and, you know, she's fast talking, Matthews is talking so fast, your head is spinning, and I knew all, you know, I had these facts at my fingertip, but it's kind of like you have to get in there, and I feel that that night I sort of let down the team a little, but I try and go on those programs. I never tailor, you know, I go on with all of the views I have here as editor of The Nation, and I bring those to bear, and I do it even though I know that the format of these shows can be pretty degrading, but you hope to touch people out there. Now, I know MSNBC doesn't have a huge audience, but still, if you can turn 10, 15 people to thinking in a somewhat different way or feeling like, hey, I think that's right and I'm not crazy to think the way I do because other people think the way I do, then I think it's worth it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, look, it's. I think it's difficult. I've done some talking and some radio interviews that, you know, it looks like it's easy, but when the questions are coming fast, it's not as easy as it appears.
But you have to, you know, what I do is try and really arm myself with facts and, you know what's going on and get out there and put those into the circulatory system and try and do so in a way to avoid that kind of shouting match, which I feel turns people off, and just state your case, and you'd be you wouldn't be surprised because you know how this works. But you do get emails from people who say, you know, I'm going to read your magazine, or I'm going to pay more closer attention. I now see that, you know, they're not telling the truth. That kind of thing is very important.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, I know that it's you have to go. I want to thank you for coming on. Your new book is called Dictionary of Republicanisms, and get it. It's very funny. It's the indispensable guide to what they really mean when they say what they think you want to hear. Katrina, thank you very much for coming on to crooksandliars.com.
Thank you, and I hope your thank your readers for all their questions.
Oh yeah, there were some interesting ones.
There were, I think, a lot of spirited ones. to put a dictionary euphemism term on it.